PSNY. What is happening, guys? We are back. This is Bleacher Creatures episode 156, brought to you as always by XL Media, Crossing Broad, Elite Sports NY, Warwick Gaming, and as always, Rivercrest NYC. What's good, man? How we doing?
Hanging in there. I mean, I'm ready for the season to start, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's like I'm on pins and needles at this point. We are exactly 1 week out from opening day. Yankees, Giants. Like, I would hate not just be a Giants fan, but a Giants executive and have to go to Yankee Stadium for opening day, especially after the offseason that they had. Like, first, like, the fake Aaron Judge report, then Carlos Correa, and they get cold feet there. And then on top of that, they have to settle not only for Mitch Haniger, who plays, I don't know, maybe 90 games a year, and then they go on Michael Conforto, who hasn't played in a year, and somehow they can justify that, but not Carlos Correa. And then they got to look right in the eyes of Aaron Judge, who told him, no, like, I don't care that I rooted for you growing up. I'm a Yankee.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, God, it, you know, I don't even know what I'm going to say about them, but just because of, like, you know, it, in the same vein where you're always like, you know, it's just the Mets. I'm always like, yeah, it's just the Giants. Like, who cares? Like, they're, you know, West Coast, like, whatever. I mean.
Like, how worried were we actually that the Giants would be serious free agency players for Aaron Judge at this point? Because going back, I don't know about you, but going back to, let's say even like mid-November, early December, I just kept thinking, like, they'll talk to him, but the Giants have never been that team to go big or go home in free agency. Yeah, they'll spend like maybe one big contract here, one there. Like, Barry Zito's the big one that comes to mind. Didn't work out too well for them. Yeah. But yeah, like the Giants, they've never been like, yeah, even though they play technically in a big market, they've never had a big market payroll.
Yeah. I mean, they should just really stick to cultivating their own talent and then paying through that, you know? That's what always made them successful. The Posies, the Lincecums, the Canes, that homegrown talent. It's like, yeah. So with, like, when they became, we all knew there was going to be that connection because, you know, Judge's childhood, but like, yeah, at the end of the day, was I really concerned with the Giants and Judge? I mean, I don't know. Not really. I always felt like, you know, whatever offer Judge would get from the Giants, he would at least go to the Yankees and give them a chance to one up them.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Like, I don't know. I'm just glad we had this conversation the other day, or in the group chat the other day, about like talent and the West Coast. I'm just glad another, you know, dare I say, almost generational talent getting stuck on the West Coast where we on the East Coast can't watch.
Yeah, I know, right? And all that being said, like, looking at the Giants right now, it's not like they have a bad team. I don't know if this is a playoff team. It's certainly not a bad team. I mean, Logan Webb, he can pitch. Sean Manaea, he's been looking pretty good. Taylor Rogers is a decent reliever. Then David Villar is supposed to be a very exciting prospect at third base. He hit like 30-something home runs in the minors last year.
They strike me as a team that has a really high floor, but not that high of a ceiling.
Yeah, the Giants, like, I've been doing a full MLB preview over at ESNY for those who read the site. The Giants, they're basically they and the Padres, in turn, they're banking on the Dodgers having one of their weaker teams in years and being kind of banged up where it matters and hoping that they can just outslug that pitching staff. Because, you know, Kershaw, he's not going to pitch, give you 200 innings again this year.
No.
Gonsolin, he's currently out with a sprained ankle. Dustin May, you don't know how many innings you're going to get out of him.
Bueller's coming off Tommy John, right?
Bueller might not even pitch this year.
Uh-huh. There you go.
Because if Bueller does pitch, he's probably going to be doing limited bullpen work in September.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that division is shaping up. Yeah, I think everyone agrees, and it's not a revolutionary thing for me to say, but you know, it's the Padres to lose.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think the Giants, when they were targeting Judge, you know, I think comes from a place of desperation just to keep pace with all of the moves that the rest of the division is making.
Backtracking, I took a look at the Dodgers pitching staff. They're more or less banking on Urias and Syndergaard to give them ace numbers.
Yeah, I can't.
It could happen. I don't think it will happen.
I don't think it will happen from both of them. I think you could get it out of Urias, but, you know, yeah, I don't see Syndergaard hitting those numbers ever again. He's just not that kind of pitcher.
Yeah, he's adjusted all right with the Angels and the Phillies last year. He definitely.
Yeah, but he's just not an ace, you know.
He's not an ace, but he's readjusted how he pitches, and you could see it in his strong spring training so far.
Yeah, that's true.
But you were absolutely right. The Giants in trying to sign Judge, yeah, they are trying to keep pace because we've seen the Padres, they're spending money through the nose. The Dodgers, you know, they're going to probably offer Shohei Ohtani a massive contract next year. The Rockies are terrible, but it's Coors Field, so their offensive numbers are padded. And yep. Even the Diamondbacks, they have a lineup that can score. They just really, you can see based off of last year, because we all know your unique former connection to the Diamondbacks, the problem there was very much the coaching. And on paper, the talent is there, just a matter of finding a pitching staff that can help support the offense as well.
Yeah, well, so I think the coaching staff they have in place is getting better.
Yeah.
And I think they're forming a stronger connection with their players. Again, my connection to that team, I'm kind of out of date with it. But from what I gathered, the clubhouse was not bad. And the leadership was not bad. It is just a matter of lack of that talent. And maybe now with like Corbin Carroll, I'm assuming at this point he's making the opening day roster.
They just extended him.
Yeah, they just gave him the extension. He had did you see that triple he hit today?
No, I didn't.
He hit a triple into the gap. Like a regular person, it's a stand-up double. It was a stand-up triple for him. It was just, like he just flew and he made it look easy. So a guy like him, you know, you got Christian Walker in the center of that lineup who I think we can all – I think at this point would be fair to say he's a bona fide power hitter.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's done it. You know, he had his first, I think, 30 home run season last year. He's gotten up to, like, 27, I think, before the pandemic. So – and he's not one of those, like, low 200 guys. Like, he'll hit 240, 250 with room, I think, to grow. So he's, like, your staple in the middle of the lineup. You just got to fill out the pieces around him. And I think I haven't looked at the rotation in a while, but they got some good rotation pieces, don't they?
Is Zach Gallen is an ace.
Yeah. I mean, so they got like one ace and maybe two midline starters. Like,
yeah, I mean, and Madison Bumgarner is a shell of himself.
Yeah. I mean, he's not going to do anything of note. It sucks for them because it sucks for the Diamondbacks because they're in that division where it's they have to go up against the Padres,
and like the you Dodgers. Said,
they're printing money, and then the Dodgers who have historically printed money.
How's this for irony? The Padres, if you think about it, are technically printing Dodger money because their owner Peter Seidler, his grandfather was Walter O'Malley.
Oh, okay. Yep. That's a good bit of irony.
Yeah.
As long as the Dodgers are dethroned.
It's time. It's coming.
Yeah.
It's long overdue. That said, I really hope they keep it up with what's always been a very successful player development system.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, back to the Yankees. So things in Yankee land were okay. So there's always these small pocket of fans on Twitter who see sub-500 ball in spring training and panic. How worried are we actually about this team? Because I for one am not overly concerned.
I'm not worried by the pitching at all.
Okay.
I know Sevy got touched up a bit early in his last start, but you know, if you watch Nestor pitch today, like they have been punching guys out left and right. Like I don't know what has gotten into this rotation, but like Nestor, Seve, and Cole have just been punching guys out like it, like they're punching tickets on a train. It, like, they're making it look easy. We've said it once, we've said it a thousand times. I have no concern about the bullpen whatsoever. I think I have a little concern with some bats. All right. Like, even then, like for me, I'm a little concerned on how Peraza's been doing. Because he's supposed to be the guy who was going to be the starting shortstop until, you know, Volpe has played his hand rather well. So, you know, Hicks seems like he's regressing again after we sung his praises a couple weeks ago.
We'll also have to figure in, now we're at the part of spring training where the good pitchers are coming out more often.
Yeah, and yeah, that's, I guess that's the part where, you know, again, always pitching is always going to be ahead of hitting.
It's been ahead of hitting for decades at this point.
Yeah, but even then, I just mean like going into a season, like, oh, you know, okay, yeah, like it's a little bit harder. I think like once pitchers start getting into that groove where they're snapping off their breaking pitches, like all that, then it's a little bit harder for the hitters to kind of get back into that rhythm. So I'm not like overly concerned, but you know, today against Steven Matz, you know, they didn't field in their entire lineup, but like, you know, they only pushed across one run, and we didn't see, like, you know, Stanton had a good hit, but like the only run was an Oswaldo Cabrera home run. So I would like to see them tune that up a little bit going at the end into the last handful of games. But overall, like, you know, I could be saying all that and all the guys are kind of checked out on spring training wise, and they're just like, hey, let's stay healthy, let's, you know, let's just see pitches and go from there.
Yeah, I mean, I am very happy and kind of excited for DJ LeMahieu, because you could see just in how he's taking his at bats and just the kind of contact he's making with the ball, rehabbing it took a while, but that toe is healthy. And he's gonna, yeah. He looks like DJ LeMahieu again.
Yeah.
And again, that isn't to say he's gonna bat 350 immediately.
No. But like, you know, if you can get a 270, 280 out of him, you know, pad that with some other guys who might hit the same, and you have Judge doing his thing, then it's a good recipe.
Let's talk about a game that happened a couple of days ago. Yankees were playing the Tigers, and Josh Donaldson just launched two home runs. Like, we've been waiting for this version of Josh Donaldson since last season. And you in particular, Alec, pointed out he made a very specific mechanical change. And then when you look at the tape from last year compared to these two home runs, it really is a night and day difference at what he was doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so he's not as much into his legs. Like, we all remember Donaldson for the, as you, I think, described, like the very twitchy, low in his legs stance with a huge leg kick and just violent swing.
Yeah. Almost. I think I was talking to my brother about this the other day. I said, it looked like he was kind of trying to leapfrog at the ball.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very aggressive, great balance and stuff. Very aggressive towards the ball. And sure enough, in the Tigers game, after a pretty slow start to spring training where it looked like the same issues were plaguing him from last year, which is hitting a lot of balls on the ground, getting beat by fastballs. I don't know if he did this earlier in the games leading up to that game, like maybe a game or two before, but I just noticed in that event, I was like, wow, he's standing a little bit taller. He's not as crouched, and that twitchiness has been tuned down just a bit. And sure enough, he gets his barrel on a fastball out in front of home plate and he launches it. So, you know, I'm like, what was his biggest issue last year, right? Yeah. You kind of, like, you implied it looked like he was guessing too much.
Yeah.
And I countered, I don't think he was guessing. I just don't think he was getting into a position to pull the trigger. And so that's why he was staring at so many fastballs. Because, you know, and I said in the group, like, it, like, this sounds so simple and so stupid, but like, you can't start the swing until your foot hits the ground. Like, just the way the kinetic chain builds up from your feet into like your final swing, you know, that can't get started until your foot gets down. And last year it just seemed like his foot was getting caught in the air for too long. And, you know, then what happens? You either are late on the fastball, you're topping the breaking ball, and you're just catching everything deeper, which just changes your launch angle to beat the ball into the ground. And it wasn't just like Donaldson was hitting hard ground balls. He was hitting choppers that were hitting the, you know, if you're doing batting practice on the field before a game, there's a tarp apron in front of home plate. So you're not beating that thing into solid rock. You know, he's beating it into the apron and, you know, getting four or five bounces to the shortstop. So,
yeah, I mean, like you're kind of making me think of something my old hitting coach, my old high school hitting coach would say about moving in the box. It's like, the more you move in the box, the more you set yourself up for a bad swing or a late swing. And now it all makes sense, because you can see with the way Donaldson was, you're saying he's chopping the ball, beating into the ground. The only way he's doing that is if he's so late that he's kind of forcing the ball back across the plate as it's already kind of crossed it.
Yeah. And look, I mean, he has made it to this point working with a very unique swing that has worked only for him. You know, when I was an instructor and I was teaching, you know, all these different aged kids, you know, anytime I pull up a Donaldson video, I always prefaced it with saying, now look, I might tell you not to do this, and then you look at Donaldson, he's doing it. I just want you to know that Donaldson is very unique and has such a fantastic understanding of how his own body and how his swing works.
Yeah.
It's going to work for him. That doesn't mean it's going to work for you.
Chris Kershaw in The Athletic recently had a talk with him. It's astounding. Because I know we kind of get on Donaldson for being kind of the bad boy, kind of a jerk, kind of rough around the edges. But just listening to his interview, the guy's almost like a savant in terms of his preparation. Like, this guy works so clearly, like, has a workout regimen down to a science. He knows how he feels and when he feels good and when, like, he said to the New York Post, I know when I can't contribute to a team, and when I get to that point, I'm gone. Yeah. And so then he pretty much said, so now he's saying, no, like, in terms of preparation, I feel good. I'm like, I'm just still getting to where I need to be. So you have to figure, he looked at, okay, what's my exercise routine? I've been doing this. All right. This isn't the problem. Looking at how I feel with the bat. Okay. The bat feels okay. Let's look at the tape. Where's the problem? Oh, I'm moving too much. All of a sudden, like we've said again, beating this dead horse against the Tigers, standing up taller in the box and just staying with the ball.
Yeah.
Nice level swing. It's that simple.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest, the change was necessitated by just him getting older, and he's probably lost a mile or two on his bat speed.
He's 37, not 27.
Yeah. So, and look, it happens. I'm just glad to see that he wasn't stubborn enough to just try to stick through it and sit and be like, no, this is my swing, I'm not changing it, which there are hitters who do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was very encouraging to see him willing to do something different, because, like, you know, he knows what he can produce. And if you look at his numbers, if you look at his Baseball Savant page, you know, the numbers kind of back up what he feels. He knows he can still produce. He was still top tier in, you know, I think it was like 96th percentile in exit velos last year.
Yeah.
So he can still hit the ball hard.
I remember right when the trade happened, like, I was talking to a few people who were hating on the trade. I actually showed the Savant chart and said, look, you might not like the trade for Josh Donaldson, but these numbers right here say that regardless of his production, he's not going to swing at any bad pitches.
Yeah.
And especially coming off a team that in 2021 struck out way too much. It was like strikeout was almost a default setting for that lineup that year. Like, that should be refreshing to see.
Yeah. But then what happens is he kind of gets lost in his mechanics.
Yep.
Starts swinging at bad pitches. And it's this whole idea of, you know, trying to slow down the game and try to slow down the at bat, right? And Donaldson, and if we want to go back to his time in Toronto, guys like him and Bautista were really good at doing that because they had such big moves. You know, when I say big moves, the big load, the big leg kick, you know, really flashy with the swing. Like, those guys could slow the game down through how they timed it. You know, they get started early, they get started slow, they don't rush it, And as long as they timed it to where they can get their foot down, it doesn't matter if that dude was throwing 102 or 92. Like, they were going to catch up with it because they could keep the game a little bit slower. What did we see last year? It looked like the game sped up on Josh a little bit. And yeah. then he was doing those. I mean, how many times did we see last year those, you know, those feeble half attempt swings at a pitch where, you know, it's in the catcher's glove. It's like, oh shit, let me try to, you know, foul that off. And then he doesn't. He sees through it. So
you have to figure there's also probably a mental aspect to it. Because up until going to the Yankees, if you look at Donaldson's career, and like maybe not so much in Oakland, but pretty much from Toronto up until he goes to the Yankees. Yeah, he's technically a journeyman playing for like three or four teams, but at the same time, he was on a team to kind of be the guy. Whereas on the Yankees, he's not a second banana by any means, but the pressure isn't there for him to be a superstar. He just needs to be like a solid, effective contributor in the middle of the lineup. But just because he's so used to being a superstar for so long, or maybe like there's that mental game where he's just putting that pressure on himself to be great.
Oh, yeah. You know, and the worst thing a hitter can do is let things snowball.
Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully, you know, I was actually hoping to see if he would play today because I wanted to continue to take a look at his swing and just how he looked in general at the plate. But hopefully he can build off that because – I'll tell you what, I know it was one game and two at-bats, but that was very encouraging to see. Like, he was not getting beat on inside fastballs, you know, so.
Yeah, he stood tall, stayed with it.
And like, let's not forget, too, like, you know, he struggled last year. I pulled up the stats. He struck out 148 times and hit 222. But, you know, he still had 15 home runs. So, if – you know, we don't need him to hit another 15 and become a 30 home run guy again. But if he can hit another 5 to 7, that's good production. That's good.
Yeah, like 20-ish home runs from Josh Donaldson is a very realistic expectation.
Yeah. And like, and honestly, let's be fair. In 2021, he hit 26.
There you go. He can still hit.
Yeah, he can absolutely still hit. Actually, I'm sorry. Yeah. I misread something. Go ahead.
Yeah. All right, so let's speak of the lineup. It's – well, before we get to the lineup, let's talk the shortstop battle. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, it's not – no, he's out.
No, it's not happening.
At this point, you're probably – you have to figure it's going to be either Anthony Volpe, Oswald Peraza, or maybe just to surprise all of us, Boone puts Ozzie Cabrera there.
Right.
You and I, also in a group chat recently, talked about building a lineup – with Anthony Volpe as the leadoff man at shortstop. I think that's honestly a fantastic idea because, yeah, you're putting a lot of pressure on the kid from the get-go, but A, he's clearly ready for it. He reads the zone so well for someone his age, but also you're kind of setting him up for success in that he's automatically going to get good pitches to hit because who's right behind him? Aaron Judge.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, with Volpe... It has to be telling that he's hitting either leadoff or fifth in every game that he starts, and he's getting multiple back-to-back starts. He's like, I'm interested to see if there's a breakdown in innings played at shortstop and if he's leading that group that you mentioned, the Cabreras and the Perazas. I think he should be on the opening day roster. I know there's a lot of people who would disagree with me. I wouldn't be upset about him playing in AAA, but like at the end of the day, I think David Cone has summarized it best is like you want your most athletic players on the big league roster, and he is their most athletic player or one of them.
Yeah.
Because like you said, he's going to get good pitches to hit at the top of the order. And if he doesn't, he has the eye to take a walk. He has the patience to take a walk. And then what? He's going to hit you with your speed or with his speed.
And then by having – okay, so you put him in the leadoff spot. Then you got Judge. You figure Rizzo's next. Stands clean up. And then how about this? DJ LeMay, who's batting fifth.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. With
that kind of contact, and you have to figure DJ's strikeouts are probably going to be down a bit this year because he's not going to be trying for power so much with no shift. Like, he can actually go back to being DJ LeMahieu.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got runners on base with DJ LeMahieu all of a sudden batting fifth instead of first. you put a rookie in the middle of the lineup, you can kind of dick around with the strike zone and make him chase.
Yeah.
You can't do that with DJ LeMahieu.
Yeah. And I do want to say, for all the positives that I have with Volpe, I have two concerns.
What's that?
One's more of a concern than the other. And it's, you know, it's when he's at the plate. My two concerns are the slider.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of hand wave that with a lot of people struggle with the slider.
Yeah.
Derek Jeter struggled with the low and outside slider. You know, it's not so much that that a guy like Volpe has to be able to hit that kind of pitch. It's just he needs to be able to lay off. Like, what does Judge do? Judge struggled with those low breaking balls that were at the knee or lower.
Yep.
Right. And when he was having those really high strikeout seasons, you know, it looked like he was kind of trying to force it. But now what does he do?
Let's him go.
He lets him go. And if he gets rung up on that pitch, oh well, right? He yeah. knows he can't hit that pitch. And therefore, yeah. he's going to force the pitcher to elevate his pitches. And then that's where a Judge does damage. So
go ahead.
But just to finish my thought, like for Volpe, I'm not so concerned about that. The one thing I am a little bit more concerned is the high fastball.
Yeah. Oh, God. God, so many hitters have been burned by the high fastball. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. He's – I'm like, you could tell Volpe's a student of launch angle. So, you know, we've seen him get beat a couple times on that high pitch. So, you know, it's
– I'll give
– you want to take – are you going to – accept those kind of shortcomings just to give him time? I'm personally, for me, I say yes. Let him figure it out.
But I'll give Volpe this much credit about the launch angle, though. I'm not overly concerned about that part just because, and I'm sure you've noticed this too, when he swings for a launch, he's not swinging for a fly ball. He's swinging for like a decent line drive or like a higher end line drive. He's not like trying to clear the wall like Joey Gallo. He's trying to put the ball in the air.
Yeah, I mean, the way I see it with Volpe's swing, I kind of think the same way with like Cabrera.
Okay,
where the two of them are better low ball hitters, just because like that's their profile.
Cabrera especially, he's wow.
Yeah, like the way they both swing, I think they can handle the bottom of the zone really well. It's also kind of like Mike Trout; he can handle the bottom of the zone really well. But as you start climbing the ladder, that's where it gets difficult. Now, again, you know, you need pitchers to be able to hit it, like, or to hit that spot to be effective. And some pitchers can, a lot of pitchers can't.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm willing to just, you know, give him a couple, like a month or two and just be like, hey, man, let's go out there and play. Be you.
Let's touch on something you said about Volpe just a few minutes earlier, Alec. You did mention Volpe is a student of launch angle. The launch angle school of hitting was very clearly born out of trying to clear the shift. It's in some cases it's helped careers, and others like Gary Sanchez, it's ruined careers.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that now that the shift is banned, speaking from like a coaching perspective, how hard is it going to be for some of these players to break that habit of just trying to, instead of playing baseball every time and taking a bat, just as I like to say, go golfing?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the idea of a launch angle swing gets a bad rap because you look at the extremes like a Joey Gallo.
Sure.
And for guys like Joey Gallo, they will continue to struggle. Like the shift is not going to help him. If it does, it'll raise his batting average from 198 to 215. But, you know, it's not going to help him in any other regard, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The way it's launch angle, quote unquote, should be taught, and I think people who do their jobs correctly, the way they do teach it is you want to hit hard line drives at a certain angle to maximize your ability to get a hit. It's not swing for the fences.
Right.
It's can you make contact on the barrel with the ball going, you know, for these major leaguers, 95 plus miles an hour off the bat above a certain angle? Because if you do that, chances are it's an extra base hit or it's a home run.
Yeah.
guys think launch angle or like trying to hit a ball 35 to 40 degrees in the air, which, look, you can hit a home run at that angle, but you're going to have to hit it really freaking hard.
Yeah. With those numbers, you're talking about finding a perfect mistake and making an even more perfect swing with the most perfect contact.
Right, right. So, you know, there are definitely going to be guys who will struggle. And then there are going to be guys who I think will be fine. You know,
Gleyber Torres might hit over 300 this year with no shift.
Let's pump the brakes there. I don't know.
He could easily hit at or about 300 just from being able to go up the middle alone.
Yes, if he sticks to that. If he sticks on an approach that's center to right center, which is a cliche, I know, but for a guy like him, that's where it works. But if he starts trying to sell out again, he's flying open with the front hip.
Okay, I'm going to say this again because some people need reminding. When Gleyber Torres is at his best and not selling out for home runs, he is Pavel Datsyuk with a baseball bat in his hands. Those hands are so soft. Those wrists are unbelievable. Give it a little flick of the wrist. My greater concern with Torres right now, if we're being completely honest, is WBC rust, just because, okay, yeah, it's technically glorified spring training games, mm-hmm. but now it's like, okay, all right, back to work. Like, this isn't me shitting on the WBC like everybody else. I thought it was great this year. I thought it was maybe the best yet. But definitely your routine traveling with a national team is going to be way different than your day-to-day routine when you're actually in spring training. Now, granted, Labor's a professional. He knows what he's doing. He's been back at camp for a while. We are recording this exactly 1 week out from opening day. I'm not super concerned about Gleyber, but I wouldn't be surprised if, like, his first week, we're bemoaning him in the group chat, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, for a lot of these guys, I always expect slow starts. He's no different. I'll be interested to see how the World Baseball Classic affects some of those guys who played and if they get off to slow starts or because like you would think for some guys, at least maybe the guys who played on like Team USA, you know, playing against Japan, you know, they faced more season ready pitching than the guys still stuck in spring training. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how everything plays out. For sure.
You like that one guy on the Japanese team. Munetaka Murakami. We're going to give the audience a quick rundown. Munetaka Murakami is a big, beefy first baseman for Team Japan. He just turned 23 years old. He plays for the Yakult. I think that's the Swallows. Yeah, Yakult Swallows. His numbers last year, 141 games, because remember, Japan has a shorter season. 318, 458 on base percentage. 1.168 OPS. He had 56 home runs, 134 RBIs, 100 walks, and over 100 strikeouts. Wow, and only 7 double plays. 25 intentional walks. Have I made my point?
Yeah, I mean, and mind you, those 56 home runs were a record.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Sada Haru O, who he wears his number for. Yeah. And I know he struggled in the World Baseball Classic, but those last two games, the game-winning hit to send his team to the finals and then that home run, all you need to know about that dude. His swing is short, it is quick, and he is strong. Yeah, I mean, he is going to be a star, in my opinion.
And the weird thing is that swing, as pretty as it was at the last minute, he kind of did that sort of Aaron Hicks thing that drives me nuts, where swing, 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 instead of finishing clean through, swing, 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 kind of kicks it up at the end. And he still somehow parlayed that into a double.
Yeah.
It almost cleared the wall.
I feel like that's a very like Japanese style of hitting.
Yes, it is. Because even though Japan has more, they've embraced the... NPB has embraced power a lot more in recent years. It does sound like, and maybe this is largely because of the baseball too, Whole field hitting is still very much encouraged, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Murakami, future Yankee, perhaps?
I hope so.
We're gonna need a first baseman in a couple of years, man.
Yeah. First, I mean, I guess he can play third too. I saw him playing third at the World Baseball Classic, but
he could play third. But like with that build, he's definitely, I think, more primed for first base, especially as he gets older.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, if he can be a Hideki Matsui again, who another reason why he wears number 55. And I think probably one of the reasons why he would want to be a Yankee, because I think, didn't he say that he was either interested in a West Coast team or the Yankees?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, so there's that connection. So hopefully the Cashman and company can play into that.
Hideki Matsui, one of my mother's favorite Yankees.
I feel like he's so underappreciated, but that's
he really is.
That's a completely different conversation. yeah, I mean, it was so cool watching the World Baseball Classic because I think it showed that the talent level in Japan and the gap between the Japanese league and Major League Baseball is growing, you know, closer and closer. It's not as big of a gulf anymore, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we still need some more hitters to come over and produce like at the high level. Now, granted, Saya Suzuki, even though he's hurt, he's still in a 5-year deal. He could still turn things around and set things in motion. But it's like I was saying the other day, like there's been ever since 1964, there are now 65 Japanese players that have come over to the major leagues, and only 3 hitters have made an impact. It was Ichiro, Hideki Matsui, and Shohei Ohtani.
Yes. I mean, I'm looking at Seiya Suzuki's numbers from last year, and yeah, 111 games, 14 home runs, 262 batting average. That's, if he can build on that, I think he can become a member of that group.
I have full confidence that Seiya Suzuki can be an elite MLB talent. He just has to stay off the trainer's table.
Yes. I know you're pretty bullish on Yoshida. I think he's going to be a pretty good hitter, at least, regardless of what he can do in the field, because I know that's, you know, suspect. But, yeah, I mean, I think Yoshida is going to be, yeah, I just sit there feeling a little bit of regret that the Yankees didn't maybe make a more serious play for him than.
Okay, well, let me clarify my position on Masataka Yoshida. Now, first off, I think that I do not think he's going to be a bust in the major leagues by any stretch of the imagination. Like, as different as Japanese baseball is, not just in how the game's played, just in terms of the fact that they have the universal ball, which actually matters if you think about it long term. I think that at the end of the day, I don't think he's going to have like the elite numbers he had in Japan. He'll be serviceable still, but I think that I'm more concerned that at the end of the day, though he'll be effective and maybe have a little more power than the comparison I'm about to make, I'm pretty sure that for the Red Sox, he's essentially going to be overpaid Andrew Benintendi. Because like pretty much the general consensus when the Red Sox signed him was like, look, we love the player. They signed him for double what he was worth.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
because he's not a big guy either.
No, he's not. I can just see him being, you know, I have an affinity for Japanese swings, especially lefties.
Yeah.
And I could just see him hitting like 40 doubles. And it's just like, it would be so pretty.
Oh, God. Now you're making me hate that he's on the Red Sox. Yeah.
I know. But like, I'm like, you want to talk about, like, you know, Josh Donaldson knowing everything about, like, how his swing works and what he can do with his body. I mean, like, you get that with Japanese hitters all the time. You know, just see the kind of martial way they approach it and their balance and their movements. Everything is purposeful. Nothing seems rushed, you know, like, so, and yeah,
you sound like a hitting coach right now.
I know. I love it. I love it. You know?
Yeah. You're about hitting the way I am with pitching. So,
yeah. So,
and I never pitched once.
Was it Sasaki or what was his name? That's 21-year-old.
On Japan. I know who you're talking about. I'm blanking on the name.
I mean, talk about another guy who is going to be a star in the major leagues one day. Like, can't wait until he comes over.
We'll see. Hold on. I'm Googling this right now. Japanese pitcher. Hold on.
Roki. Yeah. Roki Sasaki. I can't even pronounce it.
Okay.
Sasaki? Sasaki?
Roki Sasaki. Here we go.
There we go.
The monster of the Reiwa era, whatever that means. All right. Chibolote. Okay. Chibolote's not terrible.
Well, he threw like a 19 strikeout perfect game, right?
Oh, that's the guy?
That's the guy.
Oh, my goodness.
And he's 21 years old.
He's 21, 6'2". Oh, my goodness. Okay, here are his numbers from Chiba last year. 20 games, 9-4, 2.02 ERA, 129 strikeout, 29.1 innings, 173 strikeouts. Man, you ready for this? 12 Ks per nine, 1.6 walks per nine.
Like, he honestly sounds like the second coming of pitching Ohtani.
Jeez.
And by the way, he's actually 6'4".
Christ. Yeah, okay. Yeah, let's save our international money and go get him. God, we got to talk about this. So yesterday, did you hear Reggie Jackson went on Howard Stern?
No.
So he's plugging his new documentary, Reggie, that comes out on Amazon tomorrow. He went so far as to say, like, he's a special assistant for the Astros, and I get he's got to put the team over. But he was talking about adding Jose Abreu as if that was, like, a really good acquisition. Here I am going, okay, he's 36. You're paying him almost $20 million a year, and he just had his first sub-20 home run season in baseball.
Yeah, I completely forgot he was on the Astros until I saw a highlight the other day, and I was like, oh, shit, I forgot about that.
wow, you really don't care about the Astros.
Yeah, I don't. but I do think that was a good, like, money aside, finances aside, I do think it was a good acquisition because, yes, he might have had his first sub-20 home runs.
He's still at 300.
Game that has the Crawford boxes, like.
Well, yeah, like I don't know. I'm just sick of how the Astros are slowly but surely turning into baseball's Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah,
because like Jim Crane, he's officially become Jerry Jones, and then he's becoming so hands on in baseball ops that James Click, who was ready to keep utilizing Houston's really strong minor league system. And he just fired him because he like wanted to like cut the payroll and just move more in that direction. Then he goes ahead and hires this guy. I think Dana Brown is his name, who very talented executive. He was a big scouting guy, but at the same time, yeah, Dana Brown. I'm just worried that Crane hired him because okay, this is someone with an old school mentality, which. Okay, granted, no shift means you can go back to that. But I'm just worried that they're going to start gambling or just trying to build off of a somewhat tainted winning legacy. And they're just going to start buying and buying and buying and buying. And all of a sudden, minor league system's gone. And they're in cowboy land.
Yeah.
Just like talking about the glory days left and right.
Yeah, but wouldn't that also be best? Because then it's just like we all make fun of the Cowboys. Like,
yeah,
you hate the Giants, and you and I go at it all the time.
I don't hate the Giants. I'm just related to two very annoying Giants fans.
And then, you know, we have a buddy who's an Eagles fan. We go at it all the time. My girlfriend's an Eagles fan. We go at it all the time. But we all can agree. Fuck the Cowboys.
Fuck the Cowboys real hard.
So, you know.
Yeah.
I'd be perfectly fine with, you know, if in 3-4 years the Astros become, sure, a team that will always, you know, perennial, like, be at the top of their division, mainly because the division has historically been weak. Only to get bounced in the first round. That would be great.
They're also basically asking Framber Valdez and Christian Javier to put up 200 inning seasons each.
Yeah, I think I have more faith in Christian Javier than I do Valdez.
Well, Valdez, I think, did it last year, though, or came pretty close.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to look at their stats. Right.
Well, I don't know. Have we covered everything? Yeah, I think we covered everything.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Well, Yankees have a split squad game tomorrow. The Twins, that game's on YES. Then I forget who else they're playing after that. But, yeah, we will be back some point next week, either before or after opening day. I don't know if I'm going to go to opening day like I did last year. I'll probably stay at home. But, yeah, should be a fun season, man. You ready for it?
Are we ever ready for it?
No, we're never ready for it, ever.
Got to strap into that emotional roller coaster.
Yeah. All right. How many meltdowns are we going to have in the group chat within the first week?
First week? About the team? None. About individual players? How many guys are on the roster?
You got the Aaron Hicks bullets ready for the chamber. Nice. I love it.
Oh, that gun is cocked and loaded.
Oh, I just dropped my mouse. Okay. Oh, did the battery come? Okay. No, it didn't. All right. All right. Okay. We're a hot mess, folks. We're going to end the show before it gets even worse. Enjoy opening day and the rest of March Madness. We'll see you next week.